summertime, what better time to talk about summer driving issues than middle of July with John Paul, the car doctor from AAA Northeast, who's joining us remotely today because he couldn't afford the gas to get here. Hi, John.
That's right, Joe. Although gas went down a little bit. Gas went down about 15 cents across the country this week, down about 46 cents for the month. And here in the Bay State, down about 12 cents since last week and down about 26 cents over the past month. That's the good news. The bad news is it's up about $1.60 or so since last year at this time.
Right, exactly. And it's probably going to stay, would you think, right about where it is for the rest of the summer at least?
I would think absolutely. Even as, you know, people claim they're not driving quite as much because of the high gas prices. And gas consumption is actually down somewhat. Some of that could be due to vehicles are getting better gas mileage than they have been. But, you know, the average consumer, if they put 10 gallons of gas in their car a week, which is pretty typical for most people, you know, it's costing them an extra, you know, $15 or so a week. You know, add that up over the course of a year, it adds up. So, you know, people are spending more money. Maybe they're cutting back in other places. It is interesting. I saw a report this morning. Two of the biggest financial groups, Citibank and all of a sudden, I just forgot what the other one was. One of them, I think, Citibank said if the recession continues, we could see oil prices as low as $40 or $45 a barrel by the year end. Hmm. The other one said if things continue to escalate with Russia, we could see oil at $450 a barrel.
Okay, I'm going to go with the first report because
But the idea that that two of these, you know, huge, you know, bank firms can't quite agree on where they think oil and gas prices are going is pretty amazing. And the other part of it is for anybody who owns a small business and gets deliveries, diesel is still really expensive. It's up almost $2.50 a gallon over last year, and that's adding to price increases in everything from, you know, restaurants to convenience stores to supermarkets. They're all paying more for transportation, which means we all pay more for whatever it is we're going to buy.
Right. And I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, commentaries and theories and suppositions about why this is happening. But really, it's related, as you mentioned, to the cost of oil, right?
Absolutely. It's, you know, it is complicated because it is the cost of oil, and we've seen oil at $100 a barrel before, and that's about what it was this morning. But it also has to do with where that oil and gasoline is going to be traded. It used to be that, and it's still sort of the same case, the further you are away from the wellhead, the less profit you make. So the corner gas station makes a whole lot less per gallon than the people that are making it. But somewhere in between, there's some profit being made. And Part of that is, you know, certainly passed on to the consumer, which makes it hard. The other part is, you know, gasoline and oil, depending on which one of these reports you read, either it's going to be a great investment if it hits $450 a barrel, or it's going to be a terrible investment if it hits $40 a barrel. So you really, you know, the market plays into a whole lot of this at the same time. So it isn't as simple as supply and demand, but a lot of it is as simple as supply and demand.
Yeah. Are we seeing kind of pre-pandemic travel back this year, John?
Certainly from what we have seen and from talking to our members, just before the 4th of July, we did a survey. And our survey showed that people were going to be cutting back somewhat on their travel, maybe on the expense of their travel. But it still seems like there's a huge pent-up demand for travel. I live in a pretty touristy section of Cape Cod, and the house next to me is a rental. The house across the street is a Airbnb rental, and they've been filled up since just about the end of May. So I think people still are traveling. They're maybe not traveling quite as far, although I say that, it seems like half a dozen people I know are in Europe or the Caribbean right now.
And the other part of this, you know, quote-unquote recession, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic story is the worker shortage, you know, which is just adding to the delays. Are you seeing that, first of all, at AAA, and are you seeing that in the travel world?
Absolutely, we're seeing, you know, some of the reasons we're seeing travel delays is, you know, we hear from the airlines all the time that they don't have enough pilots, they don't have enough staff, and what happens, some of those, as we see flight delays due to other reasons, and it can be fueling delays and all kinds of things, the air crew literally times out, and all of a sudden they're ready for another 3-hour flight, and all of a sudden now, because the plane's delayed an hour and a half, that crew times out. So what we're really telling people, if they are considering traveling, especially traveling by air, you know, certainly be, you know, bring a lot of patience with you, because you may run into some delays, and delays are almost expected. And what we're also telling people is typically the first flight in the morning may be the one that is going to be the least trouble-free. And I know a lot of people like to maximize their vacation time or travel time by taking the end flight of the day on the return trip. That might not be the best decision at this point. It might be best to try to get the flight that's going to be the best. And of course, you know, even with, you know, you go into any repair shop these days, there's a help wanted sign out in front of it. We're doing pretty well because of our work from home policies with our call receivers. So we're actually in pretty good shape for the people to take the emergency road service calls. And we're even trying to help some of the independent garages with bonus programs. If they hire a new driver and they're doing calls for us, we'll even pay them a bonus that they can in turn pass on to their new drivers. So we're all trying to work together to make this work out the best we can.
Yeah. What about the issue of trip insurance, John? Is there insurance that you can purchase in the event, you know, your flight is canceled? Is this something that you recommend people look into?
I think it always makes sense to look into it. Now, it depends on, you know, how much you're spending. If you're spending a lot of money, say you're going on a trip to Europe, for instance, and you're spending a lot of money, trip insurance is money well spent. If you're a cheap traveler like me, and you know, you look for the $26 flight to Florida on one of the on Allegiant, Frontier, or Spirit, probably really doesn't make that much sense to even bother with the trip insurance.
Yeah.
But if you are spending a lot of money and you want some flexibility, even though the airlines in a lot of cases are pretty flexible, it's the rest of the vacation that can be a problem, the hotel stays and all of that. So trip insurance is something that you can certainly look into. And, you know, if you're traveling, say, you know, with AAA and you want to talk to one of our travel agents, people that are a whole lot more informed about that than me can fill you in on all the different bits and pieces of it.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are very, you know, multiple policies that you can buy. So you really need to ask specific questions, I think, about what would actually be covered in the event something happens. You know, what if it's the airline's fault? Will that be covered? If it's my fault, will that be covered? So really know what you're buying. Yeah.
Yeah, even at the onset of COVID, where some flights were being canceled and we weren't quite sure about COVID, we went to our insurance company that handles our trip insurance and said, you know, they had right in there, you know, due to, you know, worldwide pandemics, we aren't going to be covering your trip. And we went back to them and said, I'm sorry, we're a big customer of yours. You need to cover this.
Yep.
And they saw the wisdom of the right thing to do.
The error of their ways, as it were.
Exactly, exactly.
So, John, let me ask you, is this current fuel crisis the camel that broke the straw's back and everybody's going to go and buy electric cars now?
Well, I'm not sure everyone's going to go out and buy an electric car because there's a bit of sticker shock when you go out and do it. Electric cars are not cheap. But then again, any new car isn't cheap at this point. But people are really considering. We just did a survey that showed that about 28% of our members are considering an electric car for the next vehicle purchase. Consumer Reports also just did a survey that showed that something like 35% of their members would consider an electric car. An electric car is not for everybody. If you're somebody who does a lot of long-distance travel, depending on the car. Now, Tesla has their own charging stations, which make life a little bit easier, and they tend to have a lot of them, and they're located near highways, and you can charge up probably 80% of the battery capacity in maybe 30 minutes or so. So you stop and you know, get something to eat, use the restroom. By the time you come out, your car's charged up and ready to go another 300 miles or so. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are really interested, and I happen to be driving a Chevrolet Bolt, the small electric car from Chevrolet this week, and I found it to be really a nice car. It has, in today's conditions, I guess, about a 270-mile range. You flip the AC on, it drops maybe another 10 miles, but not bad.
Yeah.
It has plenty of performance. I put four full-size adults in it. We went out in it one night. It was comfortable. Hmm. It rides well. And at the end of the day, I plug it in just like I plug my cell phone in and charge it up. And even though I'm only charging up from an outside regular receptacle, you know, I'm probably only driving 30, 40 miles over the course of the day, plug it in, charge it up, and it's good for another 280 the next day. So electric cars certainly have their place. You know, whether there is enough electricity to go around in the short term is always something to be concerned about. The folks from National Grid say they're putting all kinds of steps in place to make sure that there will be enough electricity to charge up electric cars once they become a bigger percentage of the vehicle population.
Right. And I know even car manufacturers are ramping up in that part of their process, right? I've seen ads all the time for EV this, EV pickup truck, EV that.
Absolutely. And we're seeing some companies that we've never heard of before. Rivian, which is making a pickup truck and an SUV. They're big full-size vehicles. There's a company called Lucid, which just opened a sort of showroom in the seaport of Boston. They're selling electric cars. But again, these are in a lot of cases luxury cars that are going from the Lucid model goes from anywhere from $70,000 to $150,000. But like I said, the average transaction price of a new car now is in the mid 40s. So if you haven't been car shopping, you know, since maybe Obama was in the White House, you might be in a little bit of a shock when it comes, you know, how much cars are costing these days.
And that's if you can even get one, right? Because there is a supply issue still.
That is also the issue. And in some cases, popular cars, and pick whatever you want to think is popular, the new Ford Bronco, for instance, which is an insanely popular SUV right now, those are selling for, in some cases, $10,000 over list price.
Wow.
So normally we would go into a car dealership, you'll look at the sticker on the window and it would say, list price of $36,000. And you know in your mind you could probably buy that car for $30,000. Well, you look at the sticker price and it's $36,000, but the added on price makes it $46,000. And a lot of times, you know, they only have one or two of those and there's somebody that's going to pay it. And it's not just something like the Bronco, the Hyundai Palisade and the Kia Telluride, which are everybody's kind of best picks of cars these days for SUVs. They're also selling for $5,000 to $10,000 over list price. So I think in the short term, which might be another year even, this is going to be kind of the new normal. And I think even once we get kind of caught up with semiconductor shortage issues and manufacturing delays and all those kind of things, I think we might be settled into the list price might be the price we buy cars for.
Wow, no more negotiating. I know some folks will appreciate that, but others will feel like that they're not getting a good deal.
That you're absolutely right. There are those people that think car buying and, you know, root canals are about the same. Other people really look forward to going out there and trying to be the ultimate negotiator and walk away with the best deal. And frankly, the internet has made that a lot easier. You can really look and see what people are paying for cars these days and sort of what the dealer pays for the car. And you can go in, more informed than you ever have been. And for some dealers, they appreciate that. They're like, you're coming in, you're ready to buy, you can, you have your financing all in order, we'll sell you the car, you'll, you know, come back tomorrow and pick it up, and it's just that easy.
Yeah.
But other times it's not. So certainly it makes sense to shop around. Look at all of the information that's available from AAA to Car Gurus to IC Cars to Auto Trader. You can find a ton of information online and make your car buying a little bit less stressful.
As a result, are you seeing folks hang on to their cars longer and maybe invest more in the current vehicle?
Absolutely. Cars, you know, when people say to me, you know, oh, they don't make cars like they used to, well, thank goodness, because the way they used to make cars and the you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, you were lucky to get 100,000 miles out of a car. Today, the average age of the vehicle, of vehicles on the road, is as old as it's ever been. It's up over, I think it's 12 years and 3 months. So it's as old as it's ever been. And one of the reasons is they're not rusting away like they used to in the 60s and 70s. Mechanically, the engines are holding together better. And a lot of that has to do with unleaded fuel, better oil filters, so the engines are lasting longer. And some of it also might be that a lot of households have more than one vehicle in the family. So it's not like maybe in the 60s where a household had one car and that car got used every day. Now, maybe not quite as much, which adds to the longevity, but the idea that the average car on the road is over 12 years old is pretty amazing. And in a lot of cases now at car dealers, you'll see a car out on the lot and it might say low miles, and it's over 100,000, because today we're seeing cars go 200, 250,000 miles and do it pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was speaking with someone just this past weekend, actually, who was shopping for a used car. They found a 2010 Toyota Tacoma, I think it was, and they were asking $10,000 for this 12-year-old car.
And that's enough to really shock you when you think about it. Here's a 12-year-old car that, you know, in the, you know, even in the 90s, you'd think, well, a 12-year-old car is at the end of its life, and a 12-year-old car might be a $1,000 car. But today, with that shortage of vehicles, like you pointed out, and the ability for some of these cars to last a lot longer than they ever have, now, would I spend $10,000 on a 12-year-old car? It would have to be a really nice 12-year-old car.
Right, maybe with about 1,000 miles on it, right?
yeah, exactly.
Ask you real quick if you could run down some summer road trip tips for keeping your vehicle in tip-top shape.
Absolutely. Do the regular preventative maintenance. You know, make sure you follow the owner's manual on what you need to do. But fresh oil in a car is always good. Oil contributes to about 25% of engine cooling. So you want to make sure the oil is full. If it runs down even just a quarter or so, the engine can start to run hot. Make sure the cooling system, the antifreeze, is in good shape. All the belts and hoses are good. We see radiator hoses and fan belts last 10 years or more sometimes, but they can fail. So make sure they're in good shape. Check the tires and the tire pressure. Tires will dry rot over age. They will become damaged from potholes. Make sure they're inflated properly. You have good tread in the tires. We haven't had a lot of rain lately, but tires that are down close to almost being worn out, 330 seconds of tread on a wet, rainy day could take 50 or 60 feet longer to stop than a tire that's just half worn. So make sure the tread is in good shape. That's real important. Check the rest of the vital fluid and always carry a few things in the trunk or in the back of the car in case of emergencies, extra quart of oil. Maybe if you're planning a long distance trip, some engine coolant, mixed 50-50, half antifreeze, half water, or buy a premix that way. Windshield washer. And of course, you know, flares, reflective triangles, jumper cables, things that you might need in case of emergency. Our family cars, we have one of those portable jump packs in each car and a portable air compressor in each car. So we know if, you know, my wife says, oh, one of my tires is low, you know, maybe I can get there and take care of it. Maybe I can, you know, she can call AAA, or she could just hook up the little air compressor, pump it up, and then get to some place where they can fix the tire. So it makes it a little bit easier. And, you know, always make sure to bring a cell phone charger with you. Most people do, but if you're going to break down, you want to make sure your cell phone is fully charged so you can call for help when you need to.
I always appreciate the time, John, even if it is remotely. Great to see you, and stay cool for the rest of the summer.
You as well, Joe. And if anybody needs to get a hold of me, the easiest way, send me an email, jpaul@aaanortheast.com.
All right. We'll catch up with you in the fall.
Take care, Joe.
Bye-bye.